Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry and very special guest, the Honorable Senator Claire McCaskill is on the phone with us. Senator, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be with you guys.
On a personal note, before we get started here, I am digging the new black glasses.
You are?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I have never seen anything that sassy in a photograph like the one on your website. That thing, the glasses have to stay.
Sassy McCaskey.
That's a great glasses. I'm going to keep them on.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. Well, okay, let's get right into it with the speech this week. And I know that you were Twittering and you sent out some Twitter messages. And first of all, what's that about?
Well, not that I mean to offend anyone who is ever interviewing me, but one of the frustrations of this job is all the people I work for, everything they learn about me, they learn through a filter. They learn through either questions that are asked me or editing of a TV story or a newspaper story. So this new thing, I can talk directly to everybody in Missouri. Now, they've got to sign up to do it if they want to.
Right.
But it gives me a chance to give them a sense of what my day is like. The good, the bad, and the ugly, and it makes me think about communicating with them more frequently because I'm trying to do it at least two or three times a day, and it's fun.
Well, and, you know, a lot of the information is so important, but I signed up, and I found out yesterday what you had for lunch. I mean, do we need to know that much?
I didn't tell you what I had for lunch. I just told you I was starving.
Maybe that was it. Well, so what did you, I mean, not that this is going to be a surprise, but what did you think of the overall speech?
I thought, I thought he had a really hard job, and he has a hard job right now because he's got this pushback from the other side that what he's doing is not necessary and is irresponsible. So he's got to lay out for the country why these bold things we're doing are needed, which is a serious, you know, it's crisis. It's
right.
You know, things are not good, and then at the same time, he's got to try to give everyone confidence and reassure everyone that, you know, we're not quitters in America. We can handle any problem that is dealt our way. And so finding that balance between informing the American people why we've got to do these expensive, bold things, and at the same time keeping everyone optimistic about tomorrow, that's hard. And there are very few people that could have done it as well as he did it.
Well, one thing I think, Senator, is making his job a little bit tougher right now. Hey, I'm a Democrat. I used to work for a member of the House for many years. I'm one of the most liberal guys on the Hill, actually, Dale Kildee. But the opposition, the other side of the aisle, or your Republican colleagues, however you want to coin that, the stimulus bill. Now, I'm kind of looking at this, you know, and I'm, like I said, I'm a Democrat, but the charges they make that they really didn't have any input in it. I mean, looking at the House leadership especially, I think they have an argument there. Now, you know, this is some of the same old politics that went on when the Republicans were in charge, exclusion. And I think things would go a lot easier on Capitol Hill if everyone would finally get that you can't exclude the other side. You got to work together. You know, you can talk about it and deliver rhetoric all you want, but unless you're really doing it, all it does is hurt the effort to get things going again.
Well, let me say a couple things about that. First, in regards to the House side, you know, I can't really speak as to how their internal process worked and the rules they have over there. I can tell you that the bill that came to the House did have the Republican input. You know, this administration has spent more time in Republican caucuses in the first month than most administrations have spent in the opposing caucuses for 4 or 8 years. They have spent more time talking to the Republicans, this administration, than they have the Democrats. And as a result, the bill was drafted with 40% tax cuts and 60% spending. I think left to their own devices, a lot of the Democrats around here, I'm not one of them, but a lot of them would have preferred maybe even 80-20 spending versus tax cuts. But this was one of the largest tax cuts in the history of our country, and that was being driven in large part by the desires of the folks on the other side of the aisle. And in the Senate, it was an open process. Every time I see Lindsey Graham or one of those guys saying they didn't have a chance, I was in the room with a group of Republicans negotiating for two solid days. Hmm. And the door was open to any Republican that wanted to walk through. And a number of them did. At one time, we had as many as six or seven Republicans sitting down with a group of us on the other side trying to find that middle ground. And we made some changes in the bill. And they could have been a part of that. Many of them were. And then we had an open amendment process in the Senate. Unlike the House, we opened it up. We had 70 different amendments that were considered and voted on. Now, it's not, you know, you can't say we're not getting a chance to write the bill if we're giving you a chance to amend the bill. So I think really what the president said last Monday at the fiscal summit that I went to at the White House, he said the following thing. The majority must be inclusive, but the minority must be constructive. And I'm going to be really interested to see, we're going to debate a budget bill next week. I'm going to be really interested to see how many of the Republicans that were screaming to high heaven about the waste in that stimulus bill, how many of them have earmarks in this bill. I'm willing to bet the majority of the Republicans in the Senate have earmarks in this bill.
Well, and the other thing about that is, too, Senator, you've got to be constructive with your comments. I mean, whatever side of the aisle you're on, it's not good enough to say, I don't like it because I'm on the other side of the aisle. You've got to have something constructive to say, and I think that's a lot of times what's been missing here.
There has... You know, Tom DeLay's not in the House anymore, but oh my God, if you listen to him last night.
Yeah.
But right. Those are the people that are going out there and talking, and it's not constructive.
They talks about it every night.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that are specific to the military and some of the things that you've been working on too, Senator. And it was great to hear that part of the speech the other night where the president talked about, hey, we got to make sure that these men and women that are coming back from war, that they have benefits, that they're treated like citizens, that we do the right thing by them. What exactly did he mean by that, and what kinds of things is that going to encompass?
Well, we've been trying to nickel and dime our veterans for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really proud of what we've done the last 2 years because we have made major strides in terms of getting our hand out of the pockets of veterans for the benefits that they've been promised. The way we have budgeted, I mean, we did $1 billion over Bush's recommendation for veterans in the last Congress, in the last budget bill. That's a huge number. Trying to make sure we're not, you know, trying to do the co-pays and weakening TRICARE. And then we've done a lot of work trying to ease the transition from active military into veteran. I mean, especially if you're disabled, the whole problem of how you get from, I mean, that's what the Walter Reed problem was all about. It was the failure of the system to smoothly transition the men and women that have been hurt, that are disabled, from the active military over into the veteran system. A bill that I just introduced this week that is really important. It is unacceptable that we had a record number of suicides in our military in January. Unacceptable. That is a direct correlation to the failure to do what we need to do with mental health services in the active military. And it's a culture issue, because if you're being taught to fight and lead, it doesn't really feel comfortable to ask for help if you've got a substance abuse problem or if you've got a mental health issue.
This is the issue with the whistleblower there at Fort Leonard Wood?
Absolutely.
And it's certainly not comfortable if you seek help and you're open to disciplinary action in some cases.
Absolutely. So what happened at Fort Leonard Wood is we discovered that they had not staffed the substance abuse unit, and people were being turned away that had asked for help. And there was some games being played with the case file numbers to kind of mask the problem. So we got on that, and then we've now discovered that this is a system-wide problem, and we're continuing to look at other military bases and all of the services to look at the substance abuse help that's there. And this bill that we introduced, along with Senator Corker, a Republican colleague of mine from Tennessee, he and I introduced the bill together to make sure that when men and women who are doing it all for us, if they know they need help, we have to make sure we get them the best help possible as quickly as possible.
Well, let me ask you this, Senator. system-wide problem. It seems to me some time ago, going back a couple of years anyway, the IG of the Army determined that the Army wasn't providing a full and functional substance abuse program. And if I'm not mistaken, recommendations were made a long time ago to change that program. And I thought that recently the Army came out and stated very clearly that people who are seeking help would not face disciplinary problems.
Well, they haven't stated that clearly, and it's not so much disciplinary problems as it is a report to command. If you're afraid it's going to be a black mark on your record, then it's much harder. Mm-hmm. So it's an issue of whether or not a man or woman in uniform can have confidentiality if they're asking for help. And so we've got to figure that out, because if somebody's asking for help, then clearly they're not ready for the conflict. But on the other hand, if they think if they ask for help, they're going to get a black mark, they're more likely to probably be put into the conflict.
Or if they report someone else, right?
Right. What do they think will happen to them? I mean, they won't get promoted, or they'll...
Sure. I think people around the military understand that there is... There's the hard review and the soft review, we've got to make sure that we have to address this issue of confidentiality. How many people would go get help for a drug or alcohol problem if they knew their boss was going to be told about it the next day?
Right.
I don't know how many people would do it.
So this is an important piece of legislation you've introduced. How exactly, you don't have to really get into the minutia, but how's it going to overhaul the drug abuse and alcohol treatment programs?
Well, first, we're going to have a comprehensive review, is in the bill, mandating by all of the branches. Then we're going to establish a Center of Excellence for Substance Use Disorders within the Department of Defense. And it's got to implement this plan. And then we're going to address the issue of confidentiality, address the issue of discipline versus treatment issues, make sure that we got an appropriate line between the disciplinary focus and the treatment focus, because there still are people in the military that think that it is a disciplinary issue because of the culture. And then it also provides for care for family members. And as you all know, and I know you talk about this on your show, the strength of our military also is dependent on the support system they have with their family. And we have got to make sure that we are reaching out to family members. We've done some work already. I've been involved in educational benefits for family members, maternity and paternity leave for both active military and their spouses. But this is one where involving the family in this problem, because believe me, family members know there's a problem there. And it's just like any other person who needs substance abuse help. The likelihood of their recovery is greatly enhanced if you pull the family in.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you've got to have the support system in there. In fact, I'll just throw this in, too. You talk about the families. And, you know, we talk about every week, Senator, that the families are just so much more included and vital and important now than at any time in the military history. And you look at this housing that is now in the stimulus package, the housing for troops and their families, $890 million to improve military family housing and to provide aid to restationing military homeowners. That's a big one right there. And that's one of those things, too, that where the stimulus package is providing a lot in the care for the veterans and for the military families, which is great.
It is great. And, you know, it's a win-win, Randy, because you've got all that housing that needs to be done that's going to hire people to roof and to drywall and to do everything that needs to be done to build that housing, which is going to stimulate the economy right now as people are, you know, we had an incredible loss of jobs last week Over 660,000 people lost their jobs last week. We now have a record high number of people seeking unemployment benefits in our country since we've been keeping the records. So it's going to create those jobs, which is what the stimulus bill is all about. But the great news is after we've created those jobs, we're creating housing for the men and women who are keeping us safe.
Right. Yeah, you know, one thing I continually think about, and I can't help it, I think back to the days when I returned home from the military many years ago, and the economy wasn't exactly doing very well. Here's the thing. You do your military service. You may have been deployed 2, 3, 4, 5 times. You decide to leave the military. You get out, and you can't get a job. I mean, my God, the feeling of despair that must come over some of these veterans after fighting for their country, for serving so well, and to get out and can't even find a job.
And come back to this economy.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I went out to Walter Reed after that scandal was exposed and I spent some time talking to the people from Missouri, the men from Missouri that were there at Walter Reed at the time, and I had, you know, lunch just one-on-one with a great guy from Missouri, and I was asking him all kinds of questions, and one of the things I said to him, I said, you know, if I, you know, had a magic wand and could wave it, what is the one thing that is keeping you up at night? What is it you're most worried about? Is it, you know, is your care here? Is it your benefits? And it was very simple. He said, I'm worried about having a job, because I'm worried about getting a job when I get out of here. So it is a huge thing, and we've got to focus on that. And we've done some work on the programs that provide, you know, job transition. And I do think that there are many, many employers who have worked with us in this program that are looking to hire veterans because, frankly, they're great employees.
Oh, yeah.
They've had incredible training, discipline, work ethic. I think it's... But, you know, making sure that they have those programs available to them so it's not this scary, you know, jumping off the cliff, where am I going to go now deal.
Senator, hang on. I know you got a lot to say. We'll be right back here on The National Defense with Senator Claire McCaskill.
The only truth you'll hear on the radio, The National Defense.